Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is David Leinbach from Schneider Wallace. I represent Plaintiff Appellant Isabel Franklin. With the Court's permission, I would like to reserve 3 minutes of rebuttal time, please.
Okay.
Thank you. The question of whether non-signatories to an arbitration agreement may nevertheless enforce that agreement under an equitable estoppel theory is not a nuanced issue. In both the Ninth Circuit and the State of California, the rule is defined by a very bright line. Either the plaintiff signatory to the agreement relies on the terms of the agreement in asserting her claims against the non-signatory or not. It really is that simple. And while today appears to be the first time the Ninth Circuit has considered the equitable estoppel exception in the wage and hour context, it is not the first time this court has been asked whether statutory wage and hour claims are dependent on the terms of employment agreements. In Nebraian, this court made plain that statutory wage and hour claims do not arise out of the contract, involve the interpretation of any contractual terms, or otherwise require there to be a contract in the first place.
But counsel, as your friend has pointed out in his brief, Nebraian was talking about a choice of law issue, not an arbitration issue, and was making a specific statement in connection with making a choice of law determination. And I don't see how that much advances your case here with regard to California law and equitable estoppel in the arbitration context.
Thank you, Your Honor. So, yes, Nebraian did concern a form selection clause, but the core issue in Nebraian and this case are the same. Either these statutory wage and hour claims depend on interpretation or rely upon the terms of an employment agreement or not. So when we look at form selection clause cases, and we pointed this out in our brief, in a form selection clause case where the relevant language is relate to an agreement versus arise out of or requires interpretation of, the analysis in a form selection clause case dealing with arising out of or requiring interpretation of the contract, the analysis is the same as the equitable estoppel exception, because in both instances, the inquiry is the plaintiff relying on the terms of the agreement? Do we have to interpret this agreement in order to evaluate these statutory wage and hour claims?
Counsel, so clarify for me, and maybe you have already done this in your brief, is it your position that we should just simply not follow Garcia because Garcia is just wrongly decided by the California Court of Appeal? Or is it your view that even if we followed Garcia, you still have a shot at our ruling your way in this case?
The answer to that question is Garcia was wrongly decided and it should not be followed. It can be distinguished, but in the sense that in Garcia, the signatory and non-signatory were both party defendants, and that fact played very heavily into Garcia's analysis, and in fact, that is a distinction that other district courts have relied upon in distinguishing Garcia. But that said,
Although the court in Garcia also said with regard to another issue that Garcia can't avoid his obligation to arbitrate by artful framing as merely statutory, and you could say the same thing about artful framing by deciding not to sue a particular defendant. But you were going to tell me how it's distinguishable.
Well, the way it was distinguishable was the fact that they were both party, and the signatory and the non-signatories were both party defendants and alleged to be culpable for the wrongs that were committed. That's not the case here, and it's not artful pleading, Your Honor. The reason why the staffing agency is not a defendant in this case is they're not alleged to have done anything wrong. If, to the extent that they could be viewed as jointly and severally liable, it'd be entirely derivative of Fresno Hospital's conduct. No one's challenging an independent wrong being committed by USSI. But I would like to very briefly explain why Garcia was wrong. It did not rely on Goldman. And this court has adopted Goldman as the controlling standard in the Ninth Circuit for the equitable estoppel rule under California law. In Garcia, the court cited the scope of arbitrability cases. So in saying, well, it doesn't matter that the claim is just statutory versus contractual because here's some Supreme Court law, here's some California law that says these claims fall within the scope of arbitration agreements. But we're not talking
But counsel, even if in the abstract, if we were to have decided Garcia differently, if we were California judges, I mean, the California courts get to decide California law, not the Ninth Circuit. And in Garcia, the petition for review was denied, and I don't see another court of appeal case which is directly contrary to Garcia. So if we adopted your view that we were going to ignore Garcia, then there would be the kind of forum shopping and arbitration cases that were, I think, explicitly part of the reason for Erie in the first place, that wouldn't people be deciding federal or state forums based on whether they liked Garcia or didn't?
No, Your Honor, because Garcia stands and is directly contrary to Goldman. And Goldman is the controlling standard in the Ninth Circuit and in California. Goldman requires that the claims rely on the terms of the contract. Garcia doesn't require that. So Garcia created the split of California authority. Goldman has always been the standard, and that's the standard that this court has already adopted. So I don't think it would encourage any forum shopping, because Garcia created the split in California courts, and any California Superior Court at this point could theoretically follow Goldman or Garcia, require there to be the claims, as is the equitable estoppel rule in every other court, actually rely on the terms of the agreement, or they can decide to follow Garcia, which basically just says, as long as the claims are within the scope of an arbitration agreement, nothing more is required. But that's not the standard for equitable estoppel. It is not an issue of whether it just falls within the scope of the agreement. And that is what Garcia based its entire analysis on, is the fact that statutory claims can fall within the scope of broad arbitration agreements. That is not the equitable estoppel rule, not in California, not in the Ninth Circuit. It requires you to point to a term of the agreement and say, you are relying on this term. You are invoking the benefits of this contract and attempting to avoid the arbitration clause. But that is not the case here. That critical second step, it's the scope of the arbitration agreement, and then you have to see, are you relying on the terms? If I can reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, Your Honors.
All right, unless Judge Wallace or Judge Bea, you have questions, which won't take out of Mr. Lembach's time.
Not now, thank you.
All right, Mr. Paley.
Thank you, Your Honors. First, I have to mention that I think we're having some technical issues on my end of turning on the video. So if you can't see me, I do apologize. I've asked our tech people to see if they can figure that out.
We can see you, but there may be some background noise when you're talking.
All right.
Get closer to the microphone.
Is that better in terms of the sound?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. This court should affirm the core compelling arbitration because this case is just a straightforward application of Garcia. Garcia is very clear that says that a staffing agency employee can't have pays. She can't reap the benefits of a contract that allowed her to work with the staffing agency's client while at the same time attempting to avoid the arbitration provision in that contract. This is a fundamental issue of fairness. Here, it would be unfair to allow Franklin to avoid her express agreement to arbitrate, based upon, frankly, artful pleading that the decision to not make pays should not be rewarded as a basis to avoid patients. If this case were in state court, there is no question that it would be compelled in Garcia controlling. And contrary to Ms. Franklin's arguments, Garcia is and remains good law. It has been relied on by several courts. It has been cited with approval by several court of appeal cases. Those are unpublished. And the Supreme Court expressly declined to review or depublish the case when asked to do so. There's simply no reason to believe that Garcia is not the controlling law in the state of California. If anything, the facts here present a stronger argument for equitable estoppel than in Garcia. In Garcia, it was
Counsel, your friend points to language in Narayan where the court said, looking at California law, while the contracts will likely be used as evidence to prove or disprove the statutory claims, the claims do not arise out of the contract, involve the interpretation of any contract terms, or otherwise require there to be a contract. So why isn't your friend correct that this is a binding statement on us of California law? And if that's a true statement, it would equally apply here, and thus equitable estoppel couldn't be applicable.
Well, a couple of points, Your Honor. First, Narayan is not an arbitration or an equitable estoppel case. Second, the statement there is, frankly, not a correct statement of California law. If you, for example, look at the Castillo case, Castillo states expressly, the interest of a worksite and a staffing agency are so intertwined as to put the worksite and staffing agency in the same relationship in the context of the litigation. That is consistent with the holding in Garcia, which is that the claims against the worksite employer were rooted in the employment relationship with the staffing agency. And so here, the district court absolutely correctly found that the claims being alleged are intimately founded in and aligned with the underlying contract and arbitration provision. In fact, in this instance, I do think it's important to recall that the only employment that we were talking about between Ms. Franklin and USSI is the work being performed at the hospital. There is no other employment relationship to be discussed. It's not as if Ms. Franklin was doing something else for USSI. Everything was for the hospital. And here, the assignment agreement lays out all of the material terms of the relationship and the assignment at the hospital, including the rates of pay, both for straight time and overtime, as well as for travel time, as well as for covers issues like orientation. It specifically says that USSI is required to pre-approve all overtime, not the hospital, USSI. And importantly as well, USSI and USSI alone, not the hospital, is responsible for issuing wage statements to Ms. Franklin, which of course is only logical because the hospital didn't even know the rate of pay I was paying Ms. Franklin. And so here, the contract is integral to understanding both liability issue with regard to Ms. Franklin's claims as well as the hospital's defenses. For example, with regard to the wage statement claim, there are a number of Court of Appeal cases cited as well by district courts that note that even in a joint employment contract, that does not necessarily mean that a joint employer is for all claims alleged, specifically in the context of a wage statement claim where the hospital has no information as to what's being paid and no ability to issue a wage. And USSI has said it has the obligation to issue the wage statement.
Counsel, are there any cases that have allowed a non-signatory to compel arbitration with regard to a California statutory claim that you're aware of other than Garcia?
Garcia is the core case in that regard, Your Honor. In the staffing agency situation, that is the leading case. I would note, though, that with regard to Ms. Franklin's argument, the Ninth Circuit has never authorized the use of equitable estoppel with regard to a non-signatory attempting to enforce the provisions of an arbitration agreement, citing to the Rajagopalan case. That as we noted in our brief, is a descriptive, not a prescriptive statement. And in fact, the Ninth Circuit's recent In Re Pacific Fertility confirms that, in fact, a non-signatory can enforce an arbitration provision by use of equitable estoppel. So, fundamentally, what we have here, Your Honors, is a situation that is expressly disapproved by the California Courts of Appeal. The courts have said time and again that an individual cannot avoid their obligation to arbitrate claims by arguing that they are simply statutory and do not resound in contract. We know that from Garcia, from Metalclad. Additionally, for example, if you look at the Metalclad case expressly states that a party to an arbitration agreement who attempts to avoid the arbitration agreement by suing related parties has no agreement in the hopes that the claim against that party will be adjudicated first and have preclusive effect is not to be tolerated. And that's what we have here. There is simply no question what is going on is an attempt to avoid the arbitration provision. And as was mentioned earlier, Your Honor, if you were to adopt Ms. Franklin's view of the law, you would be setting up a situation of blatant forum shopping where there would be one rule in state court and another rule in federal court. That should not be the case. And frankly, there is simply no basis for Ms. Franklin's argument that this court should overturn Garcia, should declare that Garcia is bad law. And I will stop there and entertain any further questions that the panel may have.
Oh, thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Lembach, your rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge Bennett. I'll start inversely from the points opposing counsel has raised, starting with the Metalclad case. The Metalclad case was a breach of contract case. So naturally, the claims relied on the terms of the contract. And even then in Metalclad, that was the threshold inquiry. Are you relying on the terms of the contract? Yes, this is a breach of contract.
Can I ask you a question, please?
Yes, Judge Bennett.
You're claiming that your plaintiff and the class has a statutory right to time and a half for overtime, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Time and a half on what basis? On what wage rate? Minimum wage or the wage that's being getting paid?
Well, the rule in California, Your Honor, is the regular rate of pay.
The regular wage you've been paid. Now, the regular wage you're getting paid was in the contract, was it not?
It is designated in the contract, but it doesn't rely.
You say that the company is like Garcia and it's fine with the contract.
Your Honor, this is virtually identical to the issue this court addressed in Murphy, where the defendant said, well, you're seeking damages that relate to the price that you paid, and the price term is outlined in the agreements. Therefore, you have to look to the agreements to determine the price term, the damages. And the court said that that is not enough. While they might be used as evidence in the case, that they're not relying on the agreement and asserting the claim. And candidly, I don't need to look at the agreements to do damages in this case. I could look at pay stubs. And at that point, there's no even reference to the agreement. Turning very quickly to most of opposing counsel's arguments, the court asked asked questions directed towards the equitable estoppel issue. Every one of Mr. Paley's arguments dealt with agency. That is not anything the court's even asked about. The questions that have been posed concern whether or not Narayan was binding in terms of whether wage and hour, statutory wage and hour claims arise out of or require interpretation of the contract. There was no answer to that. And in fact, Garcia got that question wrong as well. The California Court of Appeal in Elijahwan, also cited in our brief, made very clear that wage and hour claims do not arise out of or require interpretation of employment agreements. So on that point, California law and the Ninth Circuit law is uniform. Garcia is an outlier decision. It based its decision on scope of arbitrability cases, which have nothing to do with equitable estoppel. It made a decision that is directly contrary to Narayan and Elijah Wan. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We thank counsel for their helpful arguments, and the case just argued will be submitted.